The transit of the sun, which fulfills the hopes of the world into his house of honor in Aries, took place on Friday, recorded the Emperor Nuruddin Muhammad Salim Jahangir. Kashmir had blossomed under the spring light. Fragrant buds graced their stems, he wrote, like dark amulets on the arms of the beloved, and the wakeful ode-singing nightingale whetted the desires of wine drinkers. The 50th year of the reign of this supplicant at the throne of Allah commenced happily. Well, the year hadn't begun that well. Earlier, in 1620 CE, an imperial holiday to Kashmir hadn't seemed probable at all. The kingdom of Kishtwar, part of a wall of semi-independent mountain states on the rim of Punjab, critical to Mughal security, had exploded into rebellion. Led by Eba Khan Chak, brother to Kashmir's dethroned king, and the Kishtwar ruler, Raja Gur Singh, the rebels held out against the Mughals for months. This week, on a three-day visit to Kashmir, Union Home Minister Amit Shah announced that the central government will give jobs and educational reservations to the mountain region Pahari-speaking community. The decision is meant to inject life into Kashmir's atrophied polity by empowering a long marginalized social group that cuts across religions and regional lines. There are reasons to worry, though, that the decision could end up setting off savage new fires instead. Kashmir's rulers, from the Mughals to the Sikh Emperor Ranjit Singh to the Dogra Rajput kings, learned to manipulate ethnic and religious affiliations to secure their thrones. The Pahari reservation issue has developed over decades on the back of similar cynicism. From Muzaffarabad and Mirpur in Pakistan-occupied Kashmir, the Pahari-speaking world inhabits a great arc, stretching through Rajouri and Poonch and on to Kishtwar in the east and Udi to the north. Ever since the census of 1931, Pahari had been acknowledged to be the third most widely spoken language in Jammu and Kashmir, after Kashmiri and Dogri. Early in the last century, scholar Vandana Sharma has recorded, a body of serious literature began to emerge from the peasant language, an important marker of the birth of a fledgling community. The Naya Kashmir Manifesto, the blueprint drawn up by Kashmir's first elected Prime Minister, Sheikh Mohammed Abdullah, for a revolution, promised recognition for all the region's ethnicities and languages. For the most part, though, both geography and a Kashmir-centered elite conspired to ensure Rajouri and Poonch remained underdeveloped. A backward area development scheme was put into operation, but less than half of the region's villages had any kind of road connectivity as late as 1968-1969. Almost all rural areas lacked electricity. Literacy levels were the lowest in Jammu Kashmir. Like their Pahari-speaking neighbours, Gujjar buffalo herders and Bakarwal shepherds suffered this burden of backwardness. But they had one additional load to carry, which was caste. Since the Mughal era, the Gujjar Bakarwal had faced harsh levies, but also pervasive social discrimination. The rise of a small educated elite drove Gujjar Bakarwals in the mid-1960s to demand reservations like those given to Adivasis and scheduled castes elsewhere in the country. From 1961 to 1981, scholars P.N. Pushp and K. Variku have noted in their authoritative work, successive census counts showed a sharp decline in the Gujjar population. Enumerators, they note, were manipulated by political leaders into undermining Gujjar claims for political assertion. In areas populated mainly by Kashmiri or Dogri speakers, for example, Gujjars were simply given the dominant linguistic identity. The explosion of the long jihad in 1990 finally led the Indian state to reach out to the Gujjar community, hoping to build an alliance against Kashmiri ethnic religious nationalism. The next year, Gujjars and Bakarwals were given scheduled tribe status, unlocking access to education and government jobs. For its critics, Pahari reservation is just a tool to seize back caste privilege. The Paharis, after all, include elite castes like Muslim and Hindu Rajputs, as well as Muslim Sayyids or Hindu Brahmins. There have been cases of Gujjars becoming revenue officers in areas where their families worked as tillers on the land of Rajput Zamindars, commentator Zafar Chaudhry argues. Since the inclusion of Gujjars in the scheduled tribes could not have been reversed, he says, they launched a movement for their own inclusion. There are still many areas, Chaudhry notes, where Gujjars do not dare to sit equally with the Rajputs or Brahmins. For their part, Pahari reservation supporters argue the bitter legacy of partition and three India-Pakistan wars devastated their community in ways it did not affect the Gujjars. Even if language binds the Paharis rather than an ethnicity, they argue, persistent economic and social backwardness is a compelling argument in itself for reservations. Existing caste quotas, Gujjar advocates respond, can serve Dalits and backward communities among the Paharis, some 70% of whom, scholar Javed Bhatt estimates, belong to caste groupings not currently entitled to reservations. The new policy could lead to all kinds of ambiguities. For example, it would give poor and undereducated Pahari Muslims reservation, but not similarly situated Muslims in Kashmir. Elite caste Paharis similarly would be entitled to caste quotas, but not Pandits in Kashmir or the same castes in Plains Jammu. Kashmir's political parties, interestingly, have without exception bucked the Pahari case. Former Chief Minister Mehbooba Mufti, who has now opposed Amit Shah's proposal, herself pushed for Pahari reservation in 2019. The National Conference had also backed reservation in 2014. Through Gujjar eyes, Pahari reservation suggests the new Kashmir they were promised in 2019 is much like the old Kashmiri-dominated one. Friction between Gujjars and Hindus in Jammu, fueled by conflicts over land as well as ideological and religious issues, have contributed to the tension. Rural Gujjars fought on the front line of the war against terrorism in Kashmir, and it looks to some of them as if they are being punished for having participated on the Indian side. To Emperor Jahangir, the hills of Rajouri marked the end of Islamicate civilization. Local people, he wrote bitterly, had once been Hindus, but they still have the marks of the times of ignorance. Like Hindus practice sati, he wrote, Muslim women were, quote, put into the grave along with their husbands. Also, when a daughter is born to a man without means, they put her to death by strangulation. They ally themselves with Hindus and both give and take girls, the emperor complained bitterly. Taking them is good, wrote the doting husband of Manbhavati Bai, but giving them, God forbid. Frontiers between languages, like those between religions, aren't as fixed as ideologues of identity have always wished. The critical ally who ensured the rebellion in Kishtwad was put down was Raja Gursingh's brother-in-law, Raja Sangram, the historian Jigar Mohammad records. Raja Sangram was part of a network of Manhas clan Rajputs, Hindu and Muslim, through whom Mughal power prevailed across the Jammu hills. Gursingh himself was forgiven and was released to rule yet again. Fieldwork has shown Paharis and Gujjars are deeply entwined in ways that the political debate does not acknowledge. Political scientist Kuljeet Singh found that Pahari-speaking respondents also knew at least two other languages in the region intimately. Researchers Zahoor Bhatt and Mahmood Khan made similar findings of Gojri speakers. The residents of the single district of Doda can speak Kashmiri, Dogri, Himachali, Bhadirwahi, Pogli and Siraji, each of which is comprehensible to speakers of other languages, scholar Balraj Puri has noted. For colonial civil servant Walter Lawrence, it appeared the Gujjars, a fine, tall race of men, he wrote, with rather stupid faces, the kind of blithe racism that was common in his time. Gujjars were indistinguishable from the Paharis. Lawrence reported that the Gujjar spoke Parimu and Hindki, languages we today know as Parimi and Hindko or Pahadi and Gojri. Linguists working on the 1941 census also saw no meaningful distinction, Pushp and Variku have observed. Gujri, the language of the Gujjars, is included with Rajasthani, the census enumerators then wrote. Pahadi, which is shown separately in the scheme, is closely connected with Gujri and is spoken in the same areas. Like much ethnic nationalism, the Pahadi-Gujri conflict ultimately involves what Sigmund Freud called the narcissism of small differences. The smaller the differences between two communities, many social scientists have observed, the more irreconcilable they sometimes appear to be. Electoral politics and competition for state resources has led caste and community elites to weaponize language and religion, just as monarchs from the Mughals did, in search of popular legitimacy. For leaders intoxicated by identity politics, Jahangir left behind a little warning I think you'll enjoy. "I took to drinking wine," he wrote, "and increased it from day to day until wine from grapes ceased to intoxicate me, and then I took to drinking arak. 20 cups of doubly distilled spirits, 14 during the daytime and the remainder at night, had predictable consequences. From the excessive trembling of my hand, I could not drink my own cup." Who could tell the emperor what the consequences of his actions might end up being? Kashmir needs a genuine dialogue between communities left fractured by generations of toxic identity politics, not a new war over how to divide the spoils of caste, religion, and power. I'm Praveen Swamy, and I'm National Security Editor of The Print. Thank you for listening to Security Code.